Several years ago, when I was just 19 years old, I was kind of adopted into a Greek-American family. My best friend at the time's family welcomed me into their home, stuffing me full of Greek food. I was really skinny then, so they're always making me eat. And they owned this restaurant, and they invited me along on Greek Easter picnics and family gatherings full of spanakopita and baklava. Yesterday at the big Greek Orthodox Church in Irvine, I attended the funeral of this good friend's mother, Linda, the one who made all that spanakopita and baklava. I looked at my friend as all those years of memories came rushing back and inadequately said, "Time flies." "Yes, it does," she said. And what remained unspoken between us is that with time comes change. As I sat through that funeral service yesterday, overwhelmed by incense and listening to the chanting echoing through that cavernous room with the gilded iconography adorning its walls, I marveled at how the Greek Orthodox Church does mystery. They do it well. We didn't get much in the way of practical advice or too much that was very personal to the Linda that I knew, our dearly departed, but by God, we got lots of mystery and reverence yesterday. This has been true of most religion from the beginning. It's been about mystery. The big questions we can't fully answer, like what happens when we die. But time marches on, and with it comes change. And one thing I love about Unitarian Universalism is that we acknowledge the change that comes in our greater knowledge and understanding of what was once simply mystery. And one great mystery has been about the human heart. Perhaps more even than the mysteries of God, humanity has wondered throughout time about one another. Why did he or she do what they did? What motivates some to do good and others to do evil? Mercifully, we now have science in its different forms to help explain some of our behaviors. And we recognize that there are patterns of behavior that fall into particular personality disorders. And so, narcissistic personality disorder, NPD, which may not at first seem like a religious topic, a topic for Sunday morning, can be seen indeed as such, for it is another way to understand the human heart. Our reading today suggests that we have leadership in this country who may have NPD. But what is this anyway? It may sound fairly harmless in some ways, named after Narcissus, someone in love with himself. Well, we all can exhibit those characteristics from time to time. And it's actually hard to advance in this culture without a little narcissism going on every now and then. But the NPD that we're talking about is an extreme version of this. The Mayo Clinic says those suffering from NPD have an exaggerated sense of self-importance and sense of entitlement. They require constant, excessive admiration. They expect to be recognized as superior, even without achievements that warrant it. And they exaggerate their achievements and talents. They monopolize conversations and belittle or look down on people they perceive as inferior, and they expect special favors and unquestioning compliance with their expectations. They take advantage of others to get what they want and have an inability or unwillingness to recognize the needs and feelings of others. And even as they envy others, they boast about themselves. They become impatient or angry when they don't receive special treatment and have significant interpersonal problems and easily feel slighted, reacting with rage toward the other person. They have difficulty regulating emotions and behavior and experience major problems dealing with stress and adapting to change. They feel depressed and moody because they fall short of perfection, as we all do. But they hold secret feelings of insecurity, shame, vulnerability, and humiliation, feelings they have to hide. A few years ago, I was in a work situation that, despite tapping into every skill I had developed in my life for understanding and dealing with people, was ultimately untenable. And I found myself on the internet, armchair psychologist that I am, searching to find an explanation for what I was experiencing. The person I was dealing with was unlike any I had ever known before. And then I found that list of characteristics, and everything snapped into place. So one of the most disturbing things about being in a system, whether it's a family system, or a work system, or a government system, with a leader who is in PD, is that those around that person try to normalize the situation. In an effort to please that person and keep that rage from being directed at you, you do everything you can to appease that person. And the thing is, the longer you do that, the more normal it seems. Some folks grow up in a household with an NPD parent, spending their life walking on eggshells and trying to please what can never fully be pleased. And it can be a long, it can be a lifetime journey to discover that this is not normal. Those who have NPD are also excellent at wooing people, using their charisma and the attention they give someone to lure you in, so you are doubly confused when the manipulation, gaslighting, and various forms of emotional abuse and controlling behavior are underway. Now, ultimately, in my own work situation, I discovered that there were others in that system and outside of it who assessed it the same way I did. But I didn't know that at the time because we were all busy, me included, doing our best to make it look like nothing was going on, that it was business as usual. What we are experiencing with our country's leadership does not look to me to be business as usual. And so this morning in our religious community, we are taking the time to unpack something that is no longer just a mystery of the human heart that might have once been tackled by private prayers or laments to God. This we now know and understand as a real condition that affects individuals and perhaps even in our entire country. Individually, I know there are people in this room who have had a parent, a sibling, a spouse, or significant other that they identify as having narcissistic personality disorder. You might be sitting here knowing how hard it was to get away from that situation, that you ultimately had to cut all the ties you could, engage as little as possible, and do what you could to protect yourself, knowing that your reputation would likely be trashed in that process by that person. None of this is nice to talk about. Next week, we're going to have a Louisa May Alcott Christmas. That's going to be the balm for this. But I've heard from many of you, and I mean many of you in this room, that in your own histories, you have had relationships with people who seem to exhibit these characteristics. And since it is likely we have leadership in this country who is also affected by this, the reality is we are all affected. And as a responsible faith community, we need to begin to consider, how do we respond? How can we offer healing to survivors of narcissistic abuse? I'm drawn this week to the work of Henry Nouwen. While overtly Christian in his theology, he also speaks to Unitarian Universalists in general with his very, very human-centered approach. In his book, The Wounded Healer, he writes, "Nobody escapes being wounded. We are all wounded people, whether physically, emotionally, mentally, or spiritually. The main question is not, how can we hide our wounds so we don't have to be embarrassed?
But how can we put our woundedness in the service of others? When our wounds cease to be a source of shame and become a source of healing, we have become wounded healers.
So we are dealing with leadership, and I don't mean just one man, by the way. Because there's a whole broken, abusive American system that could be described as narcissistic that puts such people in places of power. This is older. We want to blame this on a generation. This is older than youth culture of selfies. It's older than baby boomers. It's older. This goes back for a long time in our history. And that traditionally male-centered focus on being right that has historically been celebrated in our culture has played into this. So in this sense, we all sit here a bit traumatized. But the question is, how do we actually use this woundedness to serve others? One of the things I love, genuinely love about Unitarian Universalism is that we have historically always tried something more. We've never just sat in the moment and said, gee, slavery is bad, let's not do anything about it. We've always had whole groups of people who got to work on things like dismantling slavery. But I think what we didn't do enough of then and throughout history, really, is to try and figure out how to welcome in people who maybe have been slaves, people who have been deeply wounded by an oppressive system, and offer them a faith home. If you look at our history, fighting for justice when it came to women's rights, LGBTQ rights, racial justice, we were always there, actively fighting for positive change. But we didn't exactly flood our congregations with gay people or people of color or even women during those periods. And part of this is, I believe, because we didn't always make the connection between these groups' woundedness and our own. We weren't able to see ourselves in their pain and experience. We fought against slavery, for instance, but we didn't sit long enough with the question of what's wrong with the soul of a nation that would ever do that in the first place. We've been so busy fighting to make things better, and I understand that, but we didn't always pay attention to discerning what was fundamentally wrong at the core. And now, this looking away from lots of good people, lots of different organizations and groups that have been working for good, but this looking away from what has been corrupting the nation's heart, I think has caught up with us on a national scale. And this problem facing our country is not one that only some people are affected by. It's deep, and wherever people fall on the political spectrum, wherever they fall on the political spectrum, I think they are victims of a deep personality disorder dividing this nation. When we as a faith community recognize how painful these last few years have been for all of us, then perhaps we can offer something in the way of healing. Nouwen says, the more I think about the human suffering in our world and my desire to offer a healing response, the more I realize how crucial it is not to allow myself to become paralyzed by feelings of helplessness and guilt. More important than ever is to be very faithful to my vocation, to do well the few things I am called to do, and hold on to the joy and peace they bring me. I must resist the temptation to let the forces of darkness pull me into despair and make me one more of their many victims. Living with someone with NPD, those narcissistic characteristics, whether it's in your actual house or at your job or as the leader of your country, is wounding. It requires you to cope as best you can. For some, it's all about acting like it's normal. For others, it's about strongly reacting against lots of energy. But I think, from my way of understanding this disorder, the healthiest response is to recognize what you're dealing with, and disengage from the unhealthy system or individual as much as possible while you work to create positive change, while you begin your own process of healing. And when you are able to do that, then you can help others to heal. Nouwen explains this as compassion, which means literally to suffer with, is the way to the truth that we are most ourselves, not when we differ from others, but when we are the same. Indeed, the main spiritual question is not what difference do you make, but what do you have in common? It is not excelling, but serving that makes us most human. It is not proving ourselves to be better than others, but confessing to be just like others that is the way to healing and reconciliation. I love that quotation because I think it speaks to both the response against the narcissism we see at play in this country, not just in the White House, but across so many forums, and instead gets at the heart of what connects us as humans and shows that our value is in our service to one another, not in how exceptional we might think we are. You know, I doubt if Linda, whose memorial service I attended yesterday, would have thought of herself as exceptional. She was too practical for that. With the pragmatism that comes from being an immigrant who worked her way up to owning a restaurant. But it was in her service to others that she excelled, whether she really ever took that in or not. I remember at my ordination asking if we could hire her to make baklava. She would make baklava for the Ritz-Carlton and all kinds of different groups. Could we hire you to make baklava? And the next thing I knew, trays and trays of the best homemade baklava you imagine, can ever imagine, arrived absolutely no charge. She sewed traditional Greek costumes for dolls and did presentations for kids at local schools. She coached the kids' soccer teams despite the daily demands of running that restaurant. And when I brought my hungry family to that restaurant, God forbid we tried to pay the bill. It was a life of giving and service in so many ways. And it was an admirable one. So in the knowledge that we too have our healing to do, none of us are not affected by this abusive behavior. Let us serve those people searching to recover from the abuse perpetrated by those who are most broken in our world, who have lost their way from an understanding of our common vulnerabilities as humans. Let us be sensitive and kind, but strong. Let us invite in change. Let us be brave. And most of all, let us be fully and gloriously and imperfectly human.